Now, see, that's better.
Okay, we're rolling.
What?
We're rolling.
Oh, we are. You didn't tell me.
Listen, you didn't give me enough time to do things here.
All right. How long have we been doing
music?
Where I can see linoleum knife. What's that? What
I have
that
no
buzzy
idea.
Noise?
Probably because you're touching your microphone.
I'm
Stop
not,
it.
I'm not anymore. Linoleum knife. I'm Dave White.
And I'm Alonzo Duralde.
You are the disco exorcist.
Okay. That's actually my Pride Month selection.
Pride Month.
Yes.
Seriously.
Well, here's the other thing. We've been getting tons of emails from you guys, which thank you, by the way, to our listeners. Lots of top 10 lists. We're going to be doing...
We're going to sit in judgment on one per week.
Yes.
That's the rule now. We got so many.
Yes.
Keep sending them.
No, please do.
Keep sending them
to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
We're going to go through one top 10 list each week.
Yes.
And we're going to tell you how wrong you are.
Right. Well, anyway, so we have so many listeners now, more than we started with, certainly.
So many.
And you know, you're an eclectic bunch, and you're all over the planet,
grateful,
as it turns out.
We're grateful to each and every one of you, including our Japan guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I thought I would dig this chestnut out, because A, it's a...
Does it count as a chestnut if nobody knows what it is,
well,
ever in the entire world?
It's a song that I dig. And
that has never been heard by anyone but you.
And it's a song that continues to mystify me, and I'm hoping that somebody out there can explain it to me.
A song from a movie that no one ever saw except for you?
Shut up. Here's the story. In the late 80s, when I first came out,
Pride.
There were not a lot of, like, there was not a ton of gay cinema, frankly, in 1989. So I basically worked
What was there? Torch Song Trilogy.
Yeah. And, like, my Beautiful Laundrette
that
and The Boys in the Band.
1983.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boys in the Band. So I basically worked my way through... Desert Hearts, yes. I worked my way through the entire gay and lesbian section at Tape Lenders Video in Dallas.
Did you really?
Pretty much.
You like watched, you would just watch anything that's
pretty
like
much, yeah.
Gay and or lesbian?
Yeah, yeah. And so it was...
So you were really gung-ho.
Well, you know, cinema was my medium.
You weren't just like, yeah, it's time to go make out with a lot of guys.
I found time for that too.
Now I must also consume all the gay cinema that has ever been gay.
Pretty much, yeah. And I was going through the celluloid closet and trying to find, why can't I hear myself through the cans here?
You can't?
I know.
You're not hearing yourself in your head.
Barely. Turn me up a little. I'm the first one. Oh, that's better. Thank you.
Now can you?
I can hear me now. I was going through the celluloid closet.
Are we
looking
too,
up
can you tell if we're too hot right now? Because
believe me, we're way not hot.
We've been having a big fight.
We have been in recent weeks.
We've been having a big fight over how loud we should be, because I'm telling him, and I'm right, that we should turn our volume down so we don't run hot. And if you can't hear us, you should turn us up.
If you had to crank your volume up to hear this episode, it's Dave White's
fault. It's my fault. But you know what? It's better to have to turn up the volume than to be hot and always sounding like...
Well,
ears.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of the movies that I got to on this quest was this late 80s Danish teen coming out film called Friends Forever, which is now on DVD, by the way, so people can see it. And it's a really charming film. And what's kind of cool about it is that there's like this lead character, and he shows up at a new school, and he's sort of sensitive and misunderstood. And you think, okay, well, this is going to be the gay guy.
Right.
Turns out No, the lead guy is straight. The gay guy winds up being the, like, hot, obnoxious soccer jock who everybody thinks is, like, a bully. But then it turns out, nope, he's a gay.
Totally happens.
Anyway, so the whole movie is about how, you know, the soccer jock comes out and his friends are okay with it, but then the school kind of flips out about it, and so then they have this big protest at the school. And then...
It's Denmark. I thought they had socialized to child pornography in Denmark.
Apparently not so much, at least not then. Anyway, so the movie...
Not to equate the two things.
Thanks, Dave White. The movie suddenly ends with every character in the movie in some weird costume doing a musical number in the middle of a park on a stage. And it's the only part of the movie that isn't subtitled. So I have no idea.
You don't know what the song
is. No idea what that song is.
Because the song's in
Danish. The song is in Danish.
Why don't you?
So for 20 plus years.
Here's what you're going to do.
What's that?
You're going to, okay, number one. Mm-hmm. You're going to make friends with Danish pop band Alphabeat. Very successful in Europe.
I like Alphabeat.
Number two.
They have enough friends though, I'm sure.
There's like 17 people in that band.
Oh, really?
One of them has to be a gay.
Okay.
Okay, so... If one of them...
They're the, what's the American band that has a million people in it?
Arcade Fire?
No, the other one. The they always sound...
Harmonic Spree?
The Harmonic Spree. The Polyphonic Spree.
Okay, the Polyphonic Spree. There aren't 17 people in the band. There's like six. But anyway,
there's at least 17 people in the Polyphonic Spree.
You're going to make friends with Alphabeat.
Okay.
You're going to find which one is the gay.
Uh-huh.
You're going to go, hey...
Translate this number for me.
Like, find them on Facebook. Because they'll just be grateful to have anyone in America listening to them. They'll be like, they'll want to become your friend. That will happen.
Anyway, if anybody listening to this program speaks Danish, let me know. It would solve one of my life's great quandaries if I knew what the heck that musical number at the end of Friends Forever is about.
In what context is the song sung? In Friends Forever.
Like I said, the movie just stops and there's a musical number. So it's not
like what are people doing during the musical number? Are they just standing in a field dancing?
Yes. Like it goes from like the kids protesting at the school and like using a bullhorn and throwing leaflets around, and then when the cops come running after them, they run off camera and
they're littering for civil rights.
Pretty basically, yes. Okay. And then when you see them running back on camera again, they're wearing crazy outfits and they're on a stage and the entire cast of the film is there. Like characters who had nothing to do with each other are all standing together as an ensemble and singing whatever that was.
Pride. I think it's funny that you all right, you know what? I'm gonna match you before we begin talking about the current cinema.
Okay.
That's what they call it in New Yorker. In the New Yorker.
Yeah, the current cinema.
The current cinema.
Yeah, that was Pauline Kael's.
That's my new thing to say, the current cinema. Mm-hmm. In honor of Pride Month. God. I watched Everybody Sing starring Judy Garland.
You sure did.
I did. It was on TCM. And it was made when she was like 15.
They were celebrating, it was like it's her 95th birthday this year, right?
The Wizard of Oz. And here's why this woman had problems in her life, because she was in Everybody Sing with Mickey Rooney. With Mickey Rooney in Everybody Sing? No, that's Love Finds Andy Hardy.
Yeah.
That's the other Judy Garland movie that was on TCM.
Wow,
that I'm kind of making my way through.
The purses are just tumbling out of your mouth.
I'm working my way through these Judy Garland movies on TCM. You know what? I'll tell you, Judy Garland was amazing.
She was
like, you can't look at her do her thing in virtually any movie, even something stupid like Everybody Sing.
It's a gay cliche to say so, but Judy Garland was awesome.
She blows my mind every time I see her in a movie. There's a quality about her that makes you happy and sad at the same time. And
no, she's vulnerable, but she's plucky, and she has this such ready access to her emotions at any given moment.
Yeah. Like, there's a first of all right, at minute...
Which is why in real life she was like a walking, exposed nerve, you know?
At minute nine in this film, they call her ugly to her face. Mm. Now, the person who calls her ugly to her face is Billy Burke. Billy Burke would go on to play
Glinda
the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz opposite
Judy Garland.
Yeah.
But here she's playing her mother.
Here she's playing her mother. She calls her ugly.
Yeah.
She says, why won't you stop growing? Meaning,
why you are still fat.
Why you are still fat.
Yeah.
That's a long... That,
I
that,
think we've told that story.
Have we told why you are still fat?
I think we have.
We can't tell it right now, no. But we will tell it some other day. The why you are still fat story. But it's about Alonzo.
And Dave.
And so, is it minute 7 yet of the podcast?
Has anyone, please, we're at, newcomer, we're at 10 and a half.
Have newcomers turned us off?
We lost them back in the Danish part.
At minute 30...
of Everybody Sing.
Billy Burke says to her two daughters, one, the older daughter, who's very conventionally...
pretty.
Beautiful and pretty. She says, you're both looking very beautiful today. However, Billy Burke talked.
That was a scary impersonation. That weird, it was like Billy Burke that was standing
weird,
right
that
here.
Weird, high-pitched, wiggly voice that Billy Burke had.
Something like this.
Yeah. It was, and she says, even you, Judy. Her name, character's name was, conveniently enough, Judy. In the film. So, okay, there's number one. Between that and Louis B. Mayer stuffing her face full of diet pills. Mm. This woman didn't have a chance. Secondly, the reason you should watch Everybody Sing.
But it bears mentioning that even though she is called ugly throughout this movie, she's the star of the film.
She's the star of the film, and she wasn't ugly. She had a round face.
Yes.
But I think people equate that with being fat.
Right. Well, okay. I mean, you remember that whole scene in A Star is Born where she goes in for the screen test and the makeup people right. are all tut-tutting and they give her a different nose and they change everything up.
Right.
That was not far from reality. I'm sure that when Frances Gum came waltzing into MGM, they were like, oh, what do we do with this? You know.
You think they looked at her and they said, this girl's ugly?
Probably. I mean,
but there was nothing ugly about her.
Okay, I'm talking about in terms of it's basically like if you work in a shoe factory and a purse shows up.
All right, I get it. Yeah, you're right. Anyway, so here comes the part.
Oh God.
That everybody should watch and everybody sing.
So she's auditioning for a nightclub
secretly,
show.
Secretly auditioning for a nightclub
on the
DL,
show,
even though she's too young and her parents disapprove. She's going to disguise herself.
How, you might ask?
There was this thing that people used to do 100 years ago. It's called blackface. And sometimes it was sort of, you know, I won't say the word discreet, but less crazy. I think there were variations on blackface back in the day. I think there were people, maybe like Al Jolson, who dressed up in a tuxedo and then just did blackface.
Right, and wore gloves.
And then there were people who went the whole hog. And
went black body.
And this, yeah, in this scene, young, nothing under her control, Judy Garland, goes not just full on blackface.
In an era when it was still... relatively,
yeah, like people still did it. It was still fine.
Yeah,
right?
It happened. Yeah. You know, like
black legs, black arms, black face, wig,
nappy wig.
Yeah,
with little
this
bows
was
in
this
it.
Was like the pickaninny.
Yeah,
look, you know, with the little bows at the end, and
like little Eva across the ice,
crazy.
Kind of
yeah, out of control, jaw dropping, shocking. Because I'm not expecting this. I don't know anything about this.
I know it's like watching Holiday Inn, and suddenly you know Bing Crosby is like crooning in blackface, and you're like, oh, whoa, what?
Yeah, it was a genuinely shocking moment. I watched the whole thing, and then I rewound it and watched it again, because I could not believe my eyes. And then an even crazier thing happens.
She has to do.
She rejects. She is rejected because they discover that it's her, and. She has to cry and beg and plead. And when Judy Garland cries and begs and pleads, you want to cry yourself because she, I think, is genuinely feeling something horrible while she's doing this right. on camera. And it is she was the most real crier, I think, of anyone I've ever seen in films. And it can break your heart to watch her cry on screen. And
even when she's
in blackface,
she's still in blackface when she's crying and pleading to be let into the number.
Yeah,
it's the strangest thing I've ever
really
seen.
It's really weird. I recommend you watch this entire weird thing. Here's another reason to watch it. Fanny Bryce is in it, and it's one of her only movies.
As the wisecracking maid.
Yeah. And you want to look at somebody who Hollywood didn't know what to do with in movies. She was barely in any films.
Really?
Yeah, I went to IMDb and I looked her up.
Well, yeah, and Judy Garland is part of the Fanny Bryce tradition. I mean, in Funny Girl, there's that whole line about being, you know, a bagel on a plate of onion rolls or vice versa, you know? And it's like, and Streisand, for that matter, is, you know, that was her deal also. They were like, well, you're getting a nose job. Yeah. No, you know, so, yeah. So,
did they try to make her get a nose
job? Oh, God, yes.
Early in life?
Oh, yeah.
And she refused.
She thought it would mess with her instrument.
I'm sure it would have.
So she didn't. Good for her. And she won.
Yeah.
She always wins.
Gay Pride.
Gay Pride. Okay. I know where we're starting this week.
We're Alonzo Duralde of therap.com and whattheflick.com. Where are we starting this week?
I'll tell you, Dave White.
What?
Of movies.com. We're talking about Adam Sandler's latest vehicle, That's My Boy.
Awesome. Let's talk about that. What? Begin.
Oh, God.
Or do you want me to begin?
Why don't you begin? Because a lunatic.
So here's this part. The beginning. It's great.
You've said for weeks on this show, I'm an idiot, and I thought you were just speaking figuratively. And then I saw this movie with you and sat next to you at the screening.
Do I speak figuratively ever?
Apparently not. You may not even know what figuratively means. Because you liked this movie. But do go on.
This is a great moment at the beginning where this 300-pound stripper is hanging upside down from a stripping pole. And she's eating a plate of bacon and eggs. And then she tries to drink a glass of orange juice. And it goes up her nose and all over her face. She's essentially waterboarding herself with orange juice.
It's worth noting that
this is really funny.
This overweight African-American stripper, every outfit she wears has cutouts so that her pendulous, stretch-marky breasts come poking through with pasties covering up her nips.
Even though it's an R-rated movie, she doesn't have to use the pasties.
No, but taste and discretion are the hallmark of Adam Sandler's cinema.
It's part of her show. It's part of her routine. It's part of her getup.
I'm sure it's part of the actress's contract.
Maybe also that. Anyway, if you don't think a 300-pound stripper hanging upside down from a stripper pole eating a plate of bacon and eggs, because the strip joint is called Bacon and Legs.
And they're known for their omelet bar.
If you don't think that's funny, then nothing else in this movie will make you laugh.
But here's the thing.
And you should not go see it.
There are contexts in which I would find a 300-pound stripper hanging upside down on a pole and eating bacon and eggs funny.
Please tell me of those contexts.
It's about tone, and it's about, are you laughing with this character or laughing at this character? And in Sandler movies, I feel like he parades out this array of grotesques for us to be all like, aha, you're not a white frat guy like me. You're gross. You're fat. You're black. You're gay. You're a horny woman. You're a rapping granny who curses. Whatever it is.
You're a horny rapping granny who's having a three-way with Sandler and Vanilla Ice.
Yes, that happens in this movie. She doesn't rap, though.
Also hilarious. No, she doesn't rap.
So, yeah.
But she's super into Vanilla Ice and Adam Sandler.
I find Sandler's whole shtick just endlessly offensive and stupid and boring and hacky and gross. And in this movie,
much of the time I do too.
In this movie,
I'm in agreement with you.
We can't even talk about it. We can't even talk about it. But there is a plot twist in this movie that is so vulgar and out there that I think even his hardcore audience is going to be like, oh.
Well, you know, the other night when we saw it.
Yeah, the theater was stunned into silence. Even the radio people.
There were critics, and then there were the civilians.
Right.
And when that third act twist goes down, they were, all of them, including the normals, who, like me, were laughing their heads off through
through
the entire movie, they were stunned into a disgusted sort of silence. Except me.
A silence broken by the sound of Dave White going, "Ha!"
Because I thought it was funny. And then when I let out that one "ha," I thought, oh, am I not supposed to think? Am I not supposed to be laughing right now?
Apparently you were supposed to be, because it's in this Adam Sandler movie.
Here's the mark of a comedy that I can fully support. If I don't know whether or not I'm supposed to laugh, then I'm happy. I like you, find the overwhelming majority of Adam Sandler films to be tedious. I won't say they're offensive. Nothing really offends me. But I think they're tedious, and I think they are often lazy. I think Grown Ups is incredibly lazy. I think, as I said to Bibbs and Whitney on the way out, having Crohn's disease is better than watching Bucky Larson. But every once in a while, the R-rated version of Adam Sandler, the let's throw everything on the wall and let's take grotesquerie to an even like more grotesque level. There's something about that I find sort of, you know, halfway anarchic, and I'm into it.
It's not. There's nothing anarchic.
I know. I didn't say that it was. I said halfway.
This is horny 12-year-old boys at a slumber party trying to gross each other.
It's their version of it. Okay. Yeah. And I don't have a good excuse for why I laughed so much, but I laughed so much.
Now, how would you compare this movie?
Almost the entire film, and you sat right next to you, and you heard me. What were you thinking as you sat next to me and heard me continuously laughing?
That you're a moron. That I made the wrong choice in life. Now, how would you compare this movie to Little Nicky, which is the other Adam Sandler movie that you're the only person I know who liked it? Although, in this case, Gray liked this movie for some reasons I know, which
I can't
we will discuss when she's back. But
I can't remember a whole lot about Little Nicky right now, because it's been 10 years since I've seen it. Because
you're the fan of Little Nicky.
I know. I laughed. I laughed all through Little Nicky. I especially laughed.
It didn't even make money.
When Reese Witherspoon shows up as his dead mom in heaven, and she interrupts everyone because Felicity's on TV. And she's like, I have to watch Felicity. I honestly, there is no such thing as a cinematic reason for enjoying these films. You know, there is no reason other than I want to indulge in my most base reptile self.
I mean, this is for 90 minutes. This is the cinematic equivalent of Knock Knock, Who's There? And I knew you would laugh at that. I knew you would laugh at that. Case closed.
There's really can't really be much of a conversation about this.
No, it's funny or it's not funny. I just find this.
It is a deplorable, and I said this in my review, it is a deplorable piece of garbage.
That made you laugh.
That I will watch again on cable. And I will laugh all over again watching it.
It is
wrong and stupid on every level.
There's such a gross, arrogant, privileged thing in Sandler's movies that I hate.
I don't see the gross, arrogant. I see the gross and I see the arrogance. I understand him off camera, apparently, to be like this, like, rich Republican. That is what I am told.
But
I don't know that that's a fact, so I can't be, don't quote Linoleum Knife podcast on that. But
Linoleum Knife has no knowledge of the private political philosophies of Adam Sandler.
But I will say that what I know about Adam Sandler, what I have seen of him behaving in public, personally, as a human being, just out in the world, I witnessed this one day when he was going to the doctor. He was at his doctor's office, and I happened to be in the lobby of the building where his doctor's office is. And he walked past, and he went to the doctor, and he came back out quickly. I don't know what that was about, but then he went to the elevator, and people gathered around him waiting for the elevator. And they were all like, hey, they did everything that you are not supposed to do to the famous person in Los Angeles. They broke every rule of etiquette about celebrities living in this city. The number one and only rule is pretend you don't know who they are.
Right.
And, or if you see them and they clock you seeing them and noticing who they are.
Look away.
Look away and pretend that that did not happen.
Right.
This did not happen with Adam Sandler. Everyone broed it up with Adam Sandler. They walked right up to him, back slapping, hee-haw, and hey, it's Adam Sandler. You know, I loved you and Little Nicky or whatever it was they were saying.
Nobody said that.
And he was down. Mm-hmm. For the whole thing. He was pleasant to the fans. He took a picture with them. Like, and now, in addition to hearing that he's a Republican, which is not a crime in and of itself necessarily, I've heard other stories about Adam Sandler and the way he has behaved professionally from people that I know who have worked with him. And these stories are not good. But that is neither here nor there.
I'm judging him strictly on the work. The point. Strictly about the work here.
I'm getting to the point.
Okay.
I don't know what's real about him. And mm-hmm. I don't know if there is privilege and arrogance in his life. I don't know what. I mean, obviously there's privilege because he's a bazillionaire.
I don't either. I'm talking about what I'm getting from his.
But I don't get that from the film.
I do.
I get obnoxiousness and I get grotesque, you know, characters and situations. But I get it from the standpoint of, I'm always going to be 12.
But this is his thing.
Yeah.
The privilege I'm talking about has nothing to do with wealth. The privilege I'm talking about has to do with, I'm a straight white guy, and everything else is bollocks.
Do you think that he really thinks that, or do you think that he thinks that everything is fair game?
I don't know, but I know that
Matt and I are big fans of a lot of comedians for whom everything is fair
and
game.
Matt tried to use that excuse for this movie, and I don't think it applies here because Matt. I don't atchety on what the flick. Right. Because I don't think that everything is fair game in a Sandler movie. I think the other is always fair game in a
but
Sandler movie.
But he casts himself as that other often, I think.
But when
even in this movie,
Sandler is playing the loser weirdo, we're supposed to empathize with him.
Of course you
are. We're supposed to root for him. We're supposed to want him to succeed.
You don't think Sandler, you're supposed to root for the 300-pound stripper in this movie? You don't think she's part of the gang?
I think she's
part of the loser gang.
I think she serves two purposes. One is, ha ha, look at the gross fat lady in the negligee.
It's funny when fat people do things in Adam Sandler movies. The naked fat people who are doing it in the car and they're all running around all wacky.
And
after they catch them doing it in the car.
That's ridiculous.
Hilarious.
And stupid. And two, white heroes of movies are always made more lovable to the audience when they befriend black people, blind people, animals, and babies.
Is there a baby in this movie?
No, but I'm just saying it's a cheap shortcut. So he gets to have his cake of mocking her and eat the fact that by being friends with her, that makes him look like more of a swell guy.
I think that 300-pound stripper is part of his crew, and I think that all the people who you say are a rung below him in his eyes are not in his eyes a rung below.
I feel his movies are condescending freak shows.
They are freak shows, but I don't know that they're condescending. I think that they are inclusive of all the freaks, and I think that if you ask him to define his world,
he's going to rationalize.
I think. Well, I mean, is it rationalizing or is it really his perspective?
I don't know. All I know is what I'm getting.
Because when I see the films, I think, all right, it's slobs against snobs, obviously. This is what this movie really boils down to. It's, we have to save Andy Samberg from marrying into polite society because polite society is full of horrible people.
Right.
And all the freaks and losers on our side are really awesome, and
but see,
and we're going to go have a blast.
In a John Waters movie, I feel like the auteur is siding with the freaks and the losers.
Yes.
And in a Sandler movie, I always feel like, yeah, I'm siding with the freaks and losers because that makes me vulnerable and that makes you cheer for me. But at the same time, look at how gross these freaks and losers are.
ha ha! And I just, and as I just said, he presents himself as one of them.
No, ultimately, no, I don't agree.
This movie's really funny.
It's awful. It's, it is less awful than Just Go With It, and maybe than Jack and Jill, but that's about it.
There is really one funny part in Just Go With It, and that's when Dave Matthews picks up the coconut with his butt.
That wasn't even.
That was also really, that was really funny. God,
okay, let's not talk about this anymore. Ever again.
Dave Matthews picks up a coconut with his butt and just go, clenches it with his butt cheeks.
And picks it up.
And picks it up. Guess why?
Ha, ha, ha.
Because he's gay.
Ha, ha, ha. What I really want to know is how does Sandler get legitimate actors to be in his movies?
A, money. B, the promise of more money.
It's depressing. Like, I thought seeing Nicole Kidman in Just Go With It would be as bad
fantastic.
As a guy. And then in this movie, it's like, wait, what? You got these people? You know. Anyway. Adam Sandler is the pits. I wish I knew the title of David Quantick's short film to send to people. I'll post it on our wall when I find it.
What's the name?
The
of
short
it?
Film he made about Adam Sandler about.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's really funny.
Okay.
About the movie fan who tries to travel back in time to kill Adam Sandler.
I really think that my review of this film is one of the better things that I've written in a while.
Uh-huh.
Because I believe that there is a place for him in cinema. And it's the garbage place, but the garbage place needs to happen. Needs to exist. It shouldn't weigh the same as everything else. It shouldn't be.
We shouldn't spend this much time talking about it.
Frankly. Well, we had to. But the culture shouldn't spend
right
as much energy on paying attention to him.
No, these are movies that should be opening in a drive-in somewhere that fans know how to find it, but right. that we aren't talking about in the mass media.
I think that that we have, as a culture, we have ruined ourselves with a willing stupidity.
Yeah,
and making smart people uncool and facts not vax and. Beliefs trumping science and all this thing. And I said all this in my review.
And all opinions being equal.
All opinions being equal. But I still want the garbage to exist. I want it to exist so that when I feel like having a piece of processed, terrible for you, Hydrox cookie, not even an Oreo, Hydrox. they don't even make Hydrox cookies anymore, do they?
I don't know.
Probably not. I want the option
of having it on the show.
Of enjoying it.
I want the option of never reviewing another Adam Sandler movie, but I ain't getting that.
Jesse Malton was talking. Jesse Malton was assigned this one by her father.
Right.
And she was talking about it on Facebook. She's like, oh yeah, they gave this one to me. Like, Dad's not going.
Yeah. lucky me.
I had a blast watching this movie. And I am not ashamed. I'm not going to say I'm not apologizing. I'm not ashamed. I'm not. It's not a guilty pleasure. It's just pleasure.
I will nonetheless be judging you.
Repulsive and stupid, and I don't care.
I will be judging you forever for liking this. All right, let's move on. Rock of Ages. Cleft for me. What does that even mean?
Christ is the Rock of Ages.
Uh-huh. What does cleft
Jesus
mean?
Is the rock. That's
yeah,
the thing.
I got
of
that.
Of all the ages.
What does cleft mean?
Broken?
Yeah, but it sounds like it's a verb in this case.
Yeah. He was cleft.
Oh, okay. I get it. All right. Anywho,
they cleft Jesus.
Him for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I got you.
Well, not for you. You're an atheist.
No, no, not me personally.
You're going to hell.
Yeah. I mean, the me of the song. You know, I thought Peter was the rock.
That's just what the name means.
No, but doesn't Jesus say that you're the rock upon which I will build my church? Because you're stoned right now.
Yes. That is what happens.
Okay.
Not me. I'm not stoned.
No, but Peter was.
Rodney King died. I just saw this on the internet.
Oh.
While we were discussing, Rodney King died. He was my age.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he was on Celebrity Rehab, and he was the only one who took it seriously.
Oh, was he on Celebrity Rehab?
Yes, but he was literally the only one who took it seriously.
Maybe he
overdosed. I don't know.
Sorry for the digression into the internet there.
Yes, stop looking at the news.
Rock of Ages is stupid.
Rock of Ages, yeah. I went in ready for any manner of exaggeration or cheesiness or silliness or, you know... I wasn't expecting, you know, Decline of Western Civilization to the metal years. Like, I knew this wasn't going to be remotely akin to what 1987 looked and sounded like. But even taking into account, you know, yes, it's people doing these sort of cheesy old pop ballads and doing them in an over-the-top way, and they're sung by movie stars who are not necessarily singers. It's dull. It's crazy dull.
2 hours long is really boring.
Oh, my God. It's endless.
I enjoyed watching High School Musical, the first one,
mm-hmm.
much more than this film.
Yeah.
And this movie is basically a Disney Channel version of 1987 on the Sunset Strip.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so the Disney Channelification of rock and roll, of hair metal, the fact that I am saying that hair metal deserves better than this film is surprising, shocking to me. More shocking than the fact that I laughed uproariously at That's My Boy. It's so...
As I said in my review, the orchestrations make Kidz Bop sound like Glee and Glee sound like Gwar.
Yes. Just, you know, like, there's just I don't even have the words anymore. Like, I'm so tired of even talking about it. I've been talking about it for 3 days to people. And they're like, well, isn't it just fun? Like, can you explain to me what Christy... I haven't watched your What the Flick thing, but Christy liked it. Am I
Christy
wrong?
Christy liked it. And
Lemire, where are you to defend yourself right
I
now?
I think basically that it... And I'm speaking for her. You can go look at the What the Flick clip and see for yourself her defense of it. My impression is that basically it pressed her nostalgic buttons for those songs in that period, and she had stopped doing
that. I didn't
that.
Mean to. Somehow, for some reason, when I put my hand on the mic, it
buzzes.
It buzzes.
Don't put your hand on
I'm
it.
Not going to do that anymore.
I think it just pushed her nostalgia buttons and she had fun with it. I don't know. Here's the thing. Here's how you know that this movie is a big slop of Velveeta. The orchestrations are so overwhelming and deadening that even when Mary J. Blige pops up,
hold please.
Okay, stop it.
That's my favorite Mary J. Blige song of the moment. Did that come through on the mic?
Yes.
Okay. That's her Burger King commercial song.
The ad they never aired, right?
It's been on the internet.
Right.
It's got 580,000 hits on YouTube. 80,000 of them are mine. I love Mary J. Blige so much.
Anyway,
and I know that might come as a surprise to some people who think that I'm all like, you know, but I love Mary J. Blige.
So even when Mary J. Blige pops up and starts singing, even she cannot.
She even sings two of the best songs in the film.
Yeah.
She sings Pat Benatar's Shadows of the Night, which is a fantastic song.
Yeah.
And she sings Journey's Any Way You Want It.
Yes.
Another fantastic song.
And even she cannot like. Breaststroke through the morass of horrible backup singers and cheeseball muzak orchestrations.
She, I believe, and this is just a theory, I don't know this for real, but I believe she was cast by Adam Shankman out of Diva Worship.
Mm.
And then she came on set or got into the recording studio and they were like, oh, wait, we forgot. We went and hired a real singer.
Everything in here is set to non-singer.
She wipes the floor with everyone. And
when she can.
When she's allowed to. And then when she's too bold and too strong, they turn her down in the mix. They cover her with a chorus of
unseen white people.
Yeah, it's just, it's sad. And here's, as I was watching it,
Do we think that he asked
all
Latifah
she
first?
Needs? No. All she needs is some more acting practice. And the next film version of whatever African-American musical like comes along mm-hmm. where she can really star and lay it down, mm-hmm. she's going to be insane.
Yeah, the one moment of Tyler Perry's I Can Do Bad All By Myself.
The moment that I actually go to YouTube and watch again and again, because it's never been released as a song in any recorded format. Mm-hmm. Mary J. Blige shows up in Tyler Perry's I Can Do Bad All By Myself and sings the theme song, I Can Do Bad All By Myself. It's
wouldn't it be great if she had to work the words Tyler Perry's into that too?
Tyler Perry. I'm sorry. I'm going to terrorist fist jab you for that right now. God. Okay, first of all, I love Mary J. Blige, but I might love you a little more. Secondly, she's riveting.
Yes.
She takes, I can't even compare it to anything. She shows up in this stupid movie and provides, without even really speaking, just singing, provides all the moral heft of the film that it could need mm-hmm. and all the drama and all the sadness that obviously he wanted to convey through, no diss on Taraji P. Henson. She was unable to deal. You know, she's good. Taraji P. Henson is good in this film.
But she's
no miracle worker. Yeah. So I think with more acting classes for Mary J., there is a future for her in musical film.
She has a presence on camera.
She's
sure.
really great.
Yeah.
And it bummed me out. Because when she started singing Shadows of the Night, I thought, okay, now Cimarron's born and the film can begin. with Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Yes.
Yeah. Now Spirit's born and the movie can begin. I'm sorry. That was an inside joke from something a child said a long time ago during a screening of Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, when Spirit is finally foaled and the little kid says, oh, now Spirit's born and the movie can begin. When that really happened. When she shows up, I'm like, yay, Mary J. Blige is here. It takes an hour for her to show up, by the way. She doesn't come along until like 55 minutes into the movie. And when she shows up and starts singing Shadows of the Night, I think, yay, now the movie can begin. Mary J. Blige is here to sing a Pat Benatar song. No.
Nope. Mm-mm. And she's too busy managing the most PG-13 strip joint ever seen in a movie.
A strip joint where no one strips.
Yeah.
So you don't ever really understand why Julianne Hough is so upset to be working there.
I know.
Because you're like, well, you're just dancing.
I know.
You're not doing anything more naughty than they did in Flashdance.
They're all sort of acrobatically twirling around these poles up at the ceiling.
Like
it's
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, Skank du Soleil, I was calling it.
It's not even the, there's no degradation going on in this bar. People are throwing, on top of it, people are throwing money at you.
Yeah.
So not only do you not have to take off your clothes, all you have to do is dance, but they make it rain. And that was in 1987, before that was even a thing.
Yeah, it's like getting a job at Hooters, basically. You know, you get to keep your suntan hose on the whole time. Let's talk about Tom Cruise for a second, because he's the one interesting thing this movie has to offer.
If you hate Tom Cruise, I'm sorry. I understand that in many films, and I know this because I've seen all of them, that he's a giant box of nothing. But here,
this is one of those Magnolia moments where he gets his weird on.
Freaky.
Yeah.
And fun to watch. Like, fun to watch being freaky. Now, then he goes and sings a Bon Jovi song, and you're like, time to get some Skittles. But when he's talking, and this is how he talks for the entire film, and he's whispering like bizarre things into people's ears and stuff, you're like, oh, you sleep in a hyperbaric chamber. This is how Tom Cruise really is in real life. Like, you think maybe that's how it goes, like, with him.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
I think of Tom Cruise all the time as having that really disconcerting smile.
Tony Robbins kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like when people interview him.
You can
him,
do it. Go for it.
Yeah, when people interview him and they talk about how he's just always like, yeah. You know, that's God.
Yeah, but do you think when he goes home, like he walks through, one Get Smart door, when he goes home, and then he walks through the second Get Smart door, and during those, in between those two doors, like all the, he turns all the knobs down to zero on his robot body, and then he walks through the house and he's like, I'm home.
Maybe it's like,
I'm home.
Maybe it's like when Iron Man,
I'll be retiring to my quarters.
When Iron Man and the Avengers lands on the ledge and those things come out, right. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what goes on in that hyperbaric
compound?
Compound. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Rock of Ages, big, big mess.
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, ranch dressing, wrapped up in a tasty flour.
You are tortilla. No Mary J. Blige. I hate to be the one to tell you.
That's how I sing along, Mary J.
We've also got the Mark Duplass twofer this week.
He was in both of them.
Yeah. Safety Not Guaranteed, which we did not see last week, but we caught up with.
Right.
And opening this weekend, Your Sister's Sister.
I really, really, really liked Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yes.
I havesies liked Your Sister's Sister.
I mostly liked Your Sister's Sister. Let's get that one out of the way first. It's from the woman that directed Hump Day, which a lot of people like way too much.
Timid and self-congratulatory.
All talk, is no, how I all, felt all about talk Hump, no walk, that
Hump,
movie.
Hump Day was, yeah.
This
a
one,
timid movie about timidity.
Yeah, true. This movie, I on the plus side, she's got this really great cast. It's Mark Duplass with Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt. And just watching these actors interact and converse is a joy to watch, I have to say. I really like just sort of sitting back and
Beethoven level of joy. I don't know.
Well, there were just parts where I was just like, I just want to watch these two people talk for a while. And it was compelling. And
Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt were speaking just by themselves.
I thought the whole tequila scene with Rosemary DeWitt and Mark Duplass was really good.
It was fun.
Any event, The movie then collapses again under a failure of nerve, where like it takes these characters into really dark places, and has deceptions are aired and truths and blah blah blah, and then everything's resolved in a rather tidy fashion that just seems not to honor what she set up, as a writer.
The
actors are good,
and it looks beautiful because they shot it on
those islands off the coast of Washington.
Yeah, somebody's fancy summer house on an island off the coast. It's like
Bainbridge Island.
I could work it all out if I had that place to live in too.
Solvey.
Oh, there's plenty of food in this gorgeously equipped Viking stove having kitchen. Sure, we can fix any problem. I'll cook you up some vegan pancakes. They have bad vegan pancakes.
They have bad, which in the movie. Is the only kind of vegan pancakes.
Untrue. I had.
Oh, that's true. Those almond ones we had that time.
I had a very brief.
At that Thai place.
I had a very brief
stint.
Job writing food blog posts for an alternative weekly newspaper. And one of my assignments was to go find vegan, gluten-free pancakes in a restaurant that were good. And I must have gone to half a dozen places.
I went to a few with you.
And some were real mediocre, but edible. And a couple of them were really good.
There were some decent
ones. Real Food Daily makes really nice ones.
And
But they're expensive because you're at Real Food Daily.
Yeah, well, that place, that Thai place we went to that was out in like...
You have to sit next to Emily Deschanel.
Yes.
Not that that's torture or anything.
Or Jean Triplehorn.
She's
or something.
Bones, after all. But
skin and bones.
But no, she's not even skin and bones. But it's weird. Like, every time I've gone to Real Food Daily, Emily Deschanel is there. I think she eats there every day.
I don't know that I've had an Emily Deschanel spotting. Jean Triplehorn was there one time when we were both there. Yeah, I forget who else. Anyway.
It's this fancy vegan place that's about a half a
mile. It's on La Cienega.
About a half a mile from where we live. And
pricey, but if I could afford it, I could and could eat there every day. I'd be a vegan.
I'd be a vegan if I could. If they made my breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I could be a vegan. It'd be easy because the food there is really nice. Like even if you're not a vegan,
which we very much are not,
totally not. Hence all that bacon sitting over there on the counter.
Okay, we're digressing.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
We were talking about your sister, but we've covered
it. It's more fun to talk about pancakes.
It is. Safety Not Guaranteed, on the other hand, is terrific. Really great.
Yeah. Aubrey Plaza works for Seattle Magazine.
She's a lowly intern at Seattle Magazine, and her editor, Jake Johnson? I forget the guy's name. You can look it up.
Yeah.
Decides to do a story about this this personal ad where this guy says, you know, wanted partner for time travel, safety not guarantee, we'll pay you when we get back, bring your own weapon. I've done this once before. And so they think it'll be kind of a kooky human interest story. So the
about a crazy person that they can mock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the editor tries to like sign up for it and to be the partner, and Mark Duplass, who's the guy who plays the ad, smells a rat and is like, yeah, no thanks. But then Aubrey Plaza cozies up to him and
because she's cute.
And because she's adorable. he agrees. And the two of them actually, she actually sort of finds a kindred spirit in him and they kind of start building this relationship. And at the same time, he's very paranoid about people who are supposedly following him. And then at some point you realize people are following him. And then it also turns out that the main reason the editor wanted to do this story, the writer, because this old teenage fling of his lives in that town and he wants to catch up with her it's a really wonderful
movie. It goes off in about six different directions.
And they're all interesting. The subplots are
mostly all interesting. And they definitely fulfill your if you'll follow them, they fulfill your time.
Yes.
You know, they reward your time, I should say.
And it's also one of those rare films where you're like, wow, I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah.
Because they set it up in a way where, like, well, either he's nuts
or he's not. Right.
You know,
but most of all, in addition to the fact that it was unpredictable and well made on this tiny budget and funny and strange without being condescending,
right?
I am a huge fan of Aubrey Plaza.
I am now.
I have watched Parks and Rec from the beginning, and she is a tie, really, with Ron Swanson as my favorite character. Mm. Both her April, her character, and the character of Ron Swanson are, well, I identify and empathize with both of them on several levels.
I'm sure you do.
And I really appreciate the grumpy girl in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In we don't have enough of them in the culture as representatives of an entire swath of the population.
We haven't had enough of them since Parker Posey
or Ghost World.
Yes,
you know,
but I mean, Aubrey Plaza sort of brings that with her to every role. And you know, unfortunately...
I'm grateful that she exists because we don't have... We have a lot of cute girls out there, and she's definitely really pretty.
Yeah.
But
she's not like Zooey Deschanel wacky. You know? Yeah. She's actually angry.
There's a surly, angry darkness
to
her. And if you see her stand up, it's the same way.
We got some of that really from Lauren Ambrose.
It's really deadpan and you get a little bit of it from Lauren Ambrose when she's choosing to do it.
Right.
But you get the idea that this is always the way Aubrey Plaza exists in the world.
Views the
world.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big fan, and I cannot recommend this highly enough as a strange little, you know, movie that you need to go find, hunt it out. It's not in wide release.
No.
But it's not in tiny release either. It's like it's a few hundred screens.
It's making its way out there, and yeah. I think it's adding screens. I think it's building. Yeah. Word of mouth been good, and I think it's making some money. So yeah,
like I didn't review it initially because there were just too many films that came out that week.
Right,
and I just thought I don't have time for this. It's not being released as widely as I don't know what for greater glory that. 2.5 hour drama about the Cristeros War in Mexico.
Which we haven't talked about.
We will eventually. I'm not this week.
Fine.
And so I didn't review it, and I'm making up. I'm going to actually do a makeup review.
Oh, good.
It up on the site. It's awesome. It's funny. It's strange. And It hit the spot for me exactly where I wanted it to.
It premiered at Sundance, and it's the kind of Sundance movie that does it right.
I could do without the plinky, plinky, plinky score.
It didn't...
It has a lot of that.
It didn't bug me. I wasn't conscious of it until you mentioned it.
That indie movie score that I...
Yeah.
That sets my teeth on edge.
It wasn't... There are some movies where like I really noticed it. Like I remember I really liked... Away We Go, but the sort of whispery fake Iron and Wine score was driving up the wall.
Right.
This one, it kind of just went in one ear and out the other. It didn't bother me. Let's wait and talk about Oslo August 31st until I see it.
I want you to see it.
I will see it, and we'll talk about it. Is that it? Are we at DVD recommendations?
This week in Playmate of the Apes.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. I almost forgot. As we left off last week,
the astronauts had landed,
crash landed
in the ocean on the planet of the apes. I misspoke last week. The lady full of injectables who makes out with the Russian cosmonaut lady
was not
Misty Monday. I have since learned that Misty Monday is kind of a throwback girl. She's kind of almost a 70s looking girl. She's not tanned. And the injectables lady is almost tan mom level tan.
Ooh. Oompa Loompa?
Yeah. She's not tanned. She's a thin little thing with
wisp of a girl.
With not fake parts.
With the rack that nature gave her.
Not fake lips. Depilatoried all over.
Not a lot of womanscaping going on.
Yeah. And she's the smart one in the movie. She's the Aubrey Plaza of Playmate of the Apes.
Sure, Aubrey Plaza would be thrilled
Aubrey
to hear
Plaza
that.
Will be so pleased to hear she's the one when they land on Playmate of the Apes. When they land on Planet of the Apes, she looks at the other two and says, "What the hell were you thinking?" Because they're the ones that crashed the spaceship on the Planet of the Apes. So, cut to the apes. The apes are doing their, thing. And it turns out that there's a controversy on the Planet of the Apes, and it's about evolution. So we've got a relevant scientific allegorical...
Subplot.
And the question is, did apes evolve from humans? And everyone says, no, this cannot possibly be. Look how stupid they are. They don't have souls. But then they ask the gay ape, who's pink.
Of course. Whose name is?
Dr. Quirus. They ask him. And he's like, "I don't know. Get me another drink."
Is this based on an old Kaufman and Hart script by chance?
And then the astronauts, they get separated, and Misty Monday is imprisoned by the apes in a cage in a wood-paneled room with a cave woman lady who is wearing little anklet socks and Teva sandals and has a tattoo and long red lacquered stripper nails.
Which is the look on the Planet of the Apes, apparently.
And so then they have softcore lovemaking, mm-hmm. which involves the licking of thighs and bellies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
That's this week's installment
of Playmate of the Apes.
Wow, okay.
A lot of time is taken up by by the licking of bellies and thighs.
Yeah. Stay tuned for more riveting updates as Dave White watches 15 minutes of Playmate of the Apes per week.
We got a lot of emails.
We did.
This week.
I'm stunned. Thank you.
A lot of emails. And I'm gonna pull some of them up here.
Okay. Who's our top 10 list this week?
Hang on.
All right. Should I do my DVD picks while you vamp? While you search for emails?
Sure, do a DVD pick.
Okay.
I don't really have one. Okay. Jeff, who lives at home, comes out on DVD this weekend.
Speaking of Mark Duplass.
And the more I get away from Jeff, who lives at home, the more I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I liked it pretty well. You know, I gave it a good review and on movies.com. And, but the more I keep thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so I do want to see it again. And I think it's really sort of an interesting movie about not just, you know, believing in destiny, but going out and shaping your own. And I think that's what really happens.
Yeah, no, it's a movie I thought about a lot. I definitely recommend it. And it's directed by Jay and Mark Duplass. My DVD pick this week, actually, it's two movies that Criterion Collection is releasing this week. I know I always do Criterion, but they do great stuff. Both films feature Spalding Gray, the famous monologist, and both are directed by Steven Soderbergh. One of them is Grey's Anatomy, which is Spalding Gray's monologue about his macular pucker and his various attempts to cure it through Western medicine and other means. And then the other one is a documentary that not a lot of people saw called And Everything Is Going Fine. And it's a documentary about Spalding Gray's life, but because Gray talked so much about himself, it's pretty much all Gray narrating it and just edited together from different performances, from different interviews. So it's sort of like a life story in his own words, basically, because as a monologist, he talked so much about his own life and his own experiences. And I think Soderbergh put it together with Spalding Gray's son, and it's a very powerful work, and it did not get a giant theatrical release, and I think a lot of people don't even know it exists. So if you are a fan of Spalding Gray, if you like Swimming to Cambodia and Monster in a Box and Grey's Anatomy, you will definitely want to check out And Everything Is Going Fine.
All right, here's the first. All of our emails were top 10 lists.
All of them, really?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
So here is a top 10 list from listener Tito. T-I-T-O. Tito.
Okay.
Not Tito Jackson.
I was going to say, not the Jackson 5.
Okay. Tito.
Or the guy who ran Yugoslavia.
Yeah. Tito lives in Orange County.
Okay.
And so here are his top 10. All right. Now, all he says is, I like these movies. I don't know if this is, you know, I'm going to assume.
But they're the ones he submitted. Yeah, this is your top 10. We're judging anyway.
Number one, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Number two, 16 Candles. Do you like 16 Candles, Alonzo? Is that a film that you like? You can be honest. We've never really discussed it.
No, I never talked about it.
Is 16 Candles a film?
I've seen it once or twice.
Is 16 Candles a film that resonates with you on some level, maybe? Have you always enjoyed it, maybe? How old were you when it came out?
I was 16.
What a surprise.
Yes, and I was showing at a movie theater where I worked in high school, so I saw it a lot.
How did you feel about Molly Ringwald at the time? Did you like her? Were you a fan?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Fascinating. We should discuss
that on the program. It never comes up somehow.
We should talk about that sometime.
I'm surprised that somehow we've managed to elude that topic.
You might like 16 Candles a little bit.
Yes.
A little bit of 16 Candles.
What else is on his list?
This is Spinal Tap.
Okay, sure.
Frankenhooker. Now, I'm so happy that somebody put Frankenhooker on their list because I saw Frankenhooker in the theater when it came out and was very pleased. I especially liked it after she becomes Frankenhooker. Well, first of all, I liked when he makes a super crack.
Super crack is the only thing I remember from Frankenhooker.
I don't even remember Frankenhooker. I like the part where people's bodies get chopped up by the lawnmower. And I like the part after she becomes Frankenhooker and she just stumbles around the streets going, want a date? Got any money? Want a date? Got any money?
From the director of Basket Case.
Which is another fantastic movie.
Yes.
Basket Case. Yes.
We've talked about Basket Case.
I guess we have, haven't we?
Yes.
Not enough.
Press on.
See Basket Case, everybody. The Red Shoes.
Which is on my short list of movies that everybody loves that I don't get.
I haven't seen The Red Shoe.
I went and saw
it. It is a classic film I have not seen.
I went and saw it. Did I see it at The Egyptian? I think I made it a point to see it on the big screen. People love this movie. And I'm a big fan of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger. I think they're great. I did not love The Red Shoes. But, you know. I'm in the minority.
The Red Shoes is on my list of classic films I have not watched.
I get that I'm in the minority on that one, but I'm not a fan of The Red Shoes.
I'll have to get some remediation going with that one.
Okay.
Is that a word?
I don't know that that's a word.
Maybe it's not. I just made it a word.
Okay, great.
Woodstock.
Okay.
The thing is, the look on your face. Okay, like, who cares?
Look, again, well, and it's an interesting connection to The Red Shoes because, you know, it was edited by Martin Scorsese and Thelma Schumacher, who married Michael Powell in the later years of his life.
Right.
It's hard for me to judge Woodstock because I can't stand any of that music.
You sure?
Just almost all of it I find to be just not really my thing. Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix.
Well, yes, Hendrix is fine, but Country Joe and the Fish.
Who cares about that?
Well, exactly, but you have to listen to them. So I'm just saying, there are big... it's hard for me to judge it as a film because, yes, it you know, the split-screen editing and the whatever, I just find it's a lot so of the music...
fun
so,
to watch High People in the Mud.
Well... There's plenty of that, too. Yeah,
it's great. The MST3K version of Mitchell.
Well, that is Joel's last episode.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, it's poignant.
It's got Jonah Baker.
And it's got Jonah Baker and Linda Evans.
There ain't nothing
and
to
a
not
bottle
like,
of baby oil.
There ain't nothing to not like about Jonah Baker.
And and Martin Balsam is in that one, too.
Viva Las Vegas.
Okay, sure.
Which we are going to go see soon.
Yes.
Because
at the drive-in.
TCM is doing an August series of films at our favorite drive-in. They're going to show old movies at the drive-in.
Yes.
And one of them is going to be Viva Las Vegas.
Yes.
Can't wait to go see that on a drive-in. I'm going to see Viva Las Vegas at a drive-in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited. Female Trouble.
Sure.
Which is terrific. And Rock and Roll High School, which I love.
Female Trouble, incidentally, is the only movie...
Tito is a rock and roll person.
Apparently so.
Tito... Most of these movies are rock and roll based in some way or another.
Female Trouble is the only... Do not go see Rock of Ages, Tito. Female Trouble is the only movie that I listed in both of my books.
Stay home and watch the Burger King commercial, Tito.
It is one of my 101 must-see movies for gay men, and it's one of my Christmas picks.
He adds a P.S. I also dig Amarcord, Spirited Away, Deathstalker 2, Elvis movies like Blue Hawaii, Paradise Hawaiian Style, and the documentaries That's the Way It Is and Elvis on Tour. So
here's, you know, the thing about Elvis's movies is they run a very wide gamut. You can't just say I like Elvis movies because some of them are pretty great and some of them are really terrible. Like, are we talking about Jailhouse Rock or are we talking about Change of Habit?
I don't know that it makes a difference with Tito.
Well,
Tito seems to enjoy a whole lot of Elvis.
Then you're enjoying Elvis. It's not about the movie, because
well, maybe it's the movies too. Maybe he doesn't like Change of Habit. We don't know. We don't. All we have is an email.
Well, I gotta go with what I'm given here.
Right.
So.
Right. Is there a movie where Elvis sings "Kentucky Rain"?
I don't know.
That's the best Elvis song there is.
I don't know that one.
"Kentucky Rain" is the best Elvis song.
I'll have to look.
You don't know Kentucky Rain?
I don't know Kentucky Rain.
It's a great song. I would sing it for you, but I've already sung a song this episode.
Yes,
and I only sing one song per podcast.
So really, all of our emails were top 10 lists?
All of them.
Wow. Okay. Well, one by one, we will get through them all, and we would love to hear yours. So drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can like the show at our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, and you can check into the show on GetGlue.com. Even though they have us as a TV show, it doesn't really matter. We don't have stickers. I don't know how one arranges that sort of thing.
I found a page of your GetGlue stickers.
Uh huh.
This week, and it was you got sent them a while back.
Well, I rack up so many, it takes a while for them to catch up with, you know, because they only send you 20 at a time. Okay, so I'm getting them from like last
every
October.
Once in a while, there's a really good Get Glue sticker, and I take it and I put it on my laptop. Like, okay. I got the one of Mary-Kate from Beastly.
Yes.
That's on my laptop.
And Madea.
I got the Madea sticker. That's on my laptop. And this week, the Lars von Trier sticker showed up. That's going right here.
Right here. Wait, it says Lars von Trier, or it's an Antichrist sticker?
It's a Melancholia
sticker. Or Melancholia, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you can have the
Melancholia. I got my sticker, Lars von Trier sticker. I'm going to put it next to Madea. Or maybe Mary-Kate.
Tyler Perry's The Five Obstructions.
What if Tyler Perry remade Breaking the Waves?
With Medea in Madea the lead role?
In the Emily Watson.
Oh, we did get... I got a text from someone that was not a letter, and we'll pursue this on another episode because this requires, I think, an actual...
Even better, Janet Jackson.
Emily Watson. God. Oh, he'd have to change the ending, I'm sure. Somebody wanted to know which Madea movies should he see and in which order.
Well,
that's a list we need to put together. We can't just come with that off the fly. That's something we'll work on for next week.
It's going to require some research.
Yes, because
off the top of my head,
because Medea's witness protection is coming up.
The two best ones are Madea Goes to Jail. And Madea's Big Happy Family. Madea's Big Happy Family is the best.
Madea's Big Happy Family is the funniest. Best. Yeah, Madea Goes to Jail has way too much time with Rudy Huxtable being
that's why it's so great.
A book reading hooker on these streets.
We gotta get you off of these streets. It's too hard out here for you on these streets. Why are you on these streets? When you should be in church. Why are you on these streets?
Medea's Big Happy Family.
These streets is said more times.
Yeah, that's the drinking Madea, game for Madea Goes to Jail.
Goes to Jail.
Medea's Big Happy Family at least has Byron.
There is so much pleasure to be had in the Madea films. And I call them films.
The Madea cycle.
The Madea, yes. But those are the two funniest.
Yeah, I suppose. But
even the crappy movies that have Madea, like when Madea's in the crappy movie, you're like, can we just have all Madea, please?
Like in I Can Do Battle by Myself.
Like I Can Do Battle by Myself. Yeah. Get that.
You get it. I got to read the other podcast.
He's your friend.
You get the door. I was just about to mention that one of the podcasts you should be checking out is Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram. And who should be pounding at our door on a Sunday morning but Malcolm Ingram himself? All the way from Canada.
Hello.
To the lower 48, where he is now appearing on... What's the name of that show you're on?
Spoilers
with Kevin Smith on Hulu.com. He'll be doing
Kevin
that.
Kevin who?
He'll be doing that very soon, so don't miss it. Anyway, in addition to Blowhard, check out our other friends in the podcast universe, The Popcorn Mafia, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack... The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, and Film Spotting SVU.
I see you're drinking the man Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
It's bold.
I am a man. It is bold. I like the color. Like, that's really good.
That's a diet drink for men.
They designed that
can. Silvery can.
To make you happy.
Do you want to know the truth? I actually drove to Chicago instead of flying. I recently had to go to Chicago. I drove so I could specifically come back with this Dr. Pepper, which you can't get in Canada, and Faygo.
Why can't you get Dr. Pepper,
man? You can't get this manly Dr. Pepper.
Why can't you get man?
Yeah, but you guys...
Because we're a bunch of fags up in Canada.
But you guys get burnt almond Cadbury, so it balances out.
We can do it in Faygo. Have you had diet root beer Faygo?
I don't like diet any kind of drink.
Yeah. All
right, well.
And I'm not a juggalo, good, so I don't drink Faygo.
Faygo's amazing. Faygo was like getting
a... Alonzo is not a juggalo on any level.
And really? I'm
going to the gathering, right?
I know.
Yes. I'm going to the gathering of the juggalos.
You're gonna come back
dead.
You're gonna come back dead.
In 1 week, I'm going to the gathering of the juggalos. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Dollywood. I'm going to Third Man Records. I'm going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm going to Falling Water, and I'm going to the Warhol. In 1 week.
Nobody does America like foreigners.
Your life is great.
All right, and with that, Malcolm Ingram. We have breakfast to have. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Goodbye.